A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been reading about the Shimkani family shipping empire again, and he's landed on something that most coverage treats as a footnote. The interesting part isn't that front companies exist, it's that they're almost never alone. A single brass plate firm in Panama is a rookie move. What actually shows up, whether it's Mossad building a pager supply chain or the IRGC moving oil to China, is a stack. Layers of companies owning companies, crossing jurisdictions, sharing phone numbers and shipping agents and exhibition booths, built so that the investigator gives up before the trail ends.
And the thing that struck me about Daniel's framing is the phrase obfuscation through sheer complication. That's not a euphemism. That's the actual mechanism. The structure itself is the weapon. You're not hiding the owner behind one locked door. You're putting him behind 40 doors in 12 countries, and half the doors are owned by companies that do nothing except own the company below them.
Which means the interesting question isn't who's at the bottom. It's how the layers are connected, because that's where the sloppiness lives. The deliberate connections, the shared phone number, the name that's slightly too similar to a real company, the cutout that exists only to be an extra layer.
Right? And I want to distinguish two topologies here, because Daniel's question kind of assumes one shape and the reality is messier. Intelligence agencies build vertical stacks, a chain of cover for one operation. Mossad's pager operation is the cleanest example anyone's ever described on the record. The ex-agents who talked to CBS last December called it shell companies over shell companies. They said, "We create a pretend world." The chain ran from Gold Apollo, the Taiwanese brand, to BAC Consulting in Hungary, to Norda Global in Bulgaria, and further. Each layer washed its hands. The Hungarian woman whose name was on BAC Consulting said she didn't make the pagers, she was just the intermediate, and she was probably telling the truth.
That's the part that should scare people. The stooge at Layer 3 doesn't know what Layer 1 is doing, so even a fully cooperative witness can't give you the truth. It's not that they're lying. They're structurally incapable of knowing.
And then the sanctions evaders build something different. Horizontal webs. The Shimkani network that Treasury designated in April, that thing had over 115 vessels, entities, and individuals. 62 vessels in one tranche. The entities shared phone numbers across Panama and the UAE. They shared shipping agents. An Iranian freight company and a Russian logistics company shared a booth at a trade show in Moscow. It's not a chain, it's a mesh.
So the vertical stack is for a single operation with a beginning and an end. The horizontal web is for ongoing throughput. Oil, gold, money. The stack hides the who. The web absorbs the losses.
And the web is designed for whack-a-mole. Karen documented this. After the US sanctioned Shadow Fleet ships named after Disney characters, the network reshuffled. Vessels got transferred to unsanctioned entities. Names and flags changed. The point of having 30 parallel shells is that designating one doesn't collapse anything. You cut off a tentacle and the thing keeps swimming.
Daniel asked how these labyrinths are deliberately connected. I think the answer starts with something unglamorous. Shared identifiers, phone numbers, addresses, agents, booths at trade shows. The things that feel too boring to hide. If you're setting up a shell in Hong Kong and another in the UAE, you remember to use different directors. You might forget to use a different phone number.
The FinCEN alert from May is explicit about this. The IRGC nests shells in Hong Kong for incorporation, China for banking, UAE free zones for trade. The entities share addresses and counterparties and have name similarities with already designated companies, but they sit just outside the formal designation parameters. The seams between jurisdictions are the whole game. No single registry sees the whole picture.
And the name mimicry is a special kind of nasty. The Iran-Contra Enterprise had a Liberian shell called Defex SA, deliberately close to a real Portuguese arms supplier called Defex. So when the financial records showed money going to Defex, an auditor would assume it was the legitimate supplier charging a markup, not a shell pocketing the difference.
That's from the Walsh Report. Chapter 8. The whole enterprise ran 21 corporate and investment accounts in Switzerland. $47.6 million flowed through. When the accounts got frozen, 16 of them held $7.8 million. The structure existed to make the money's origin and destination illegible.
$47.6 million is a nice round number for a covert arms network. It's also roughly what a mid-sized regional bank loses in a bad quarter. The scale of these things is simultaneously enormous and tiny.
And then there's the layer that exists only to be a layer. The Walsh Report describes Amalgamated Commercial Enterprises, a Panamanian corporation set up by Southern Air Transport, as a financial cutout. Its entire function was to be an extra layer of concealment. It didn't trade. It didn't employ anyone meaningful. It owned things and got owned.
The FATF and Egmont Group analyzed 106 case studies on concealment of beneficial ownership. The primary vehicle was legal persons, shell companies. And the structures were complex specifically to obscure beneficial ownership, avoid tax, conceal wealth, and launder proceeds. The EU's fourth anti-money laundering directive lists complexity of ownership structures as a high-risk factor. This isn't a secret. It's in the compliance manuals. And it still works.
Because the compliance manual tells you to look for complexity. It doesn't tell you how to unwind 40 layers when each one is in a jurisdiction that won't answer your request for information. Sardine's analysis of layered ownership is blunt about this. Each layer exists to add distance, not to run a business. Many intermediate companies do nothing except own the company below them. And the structure is built to exhaust you before you reach the person who actually controls the asset.
Investigator fatigue. That's the product. You're not selling oil or pagers or deniability. You're selling exhaustion. The first offshore layer hands the investigator exactly what the launderer wanted, a stopping point.
And the most effective fronts do real business. That's the counterintuitive part. They pay taxes, they hold contracts, they employ people. The Mossad agents said they created a global production company. They wrote the screenplay, directed, produced, starred. The world was their stage. That's not a metaphor for a brass plate. That's a description of a functioning business that also happens to be a weapon.
Which is why the operational sniff test works. Does a consulting firm import heavy machinery? Does a Hungarian company that licenses a Taiwanese brand actually manufacture anything? The front that does nothing is easy to spot. The front that does something plausible is the one that survives.
The CIA's post-9/11 network is the cautionary tale. They set up as many as 12 front companies as black stations, spent hundreds of millions. By 2008, all but two were shut down. The LA Times reported on it. The problem wasn't the concept. It was that a front company operated by an intelligence agency has a lifespan. It burns. The cover degrades. The stooges talk. The paper trail accretes.
And the agency's own reading room describes an overlapping, interlocking network of front companies. They knew the structure. They built it anyway. Because the alternative is worse. A single front company that gets blown means the whole operation is exposed. A stack means you lose one layer and the rest keep functioning.
The Shamkani oil for gold scheme ran for more than 5 years before enforcement caught up. 5 years. That's the lag. And even after designation, portions of the Krios fleet got transferred to unsanctioned entities. Vizoro Shipping. And Ocean Leonid's London network, four firms sharing management with sanctioned affiliates, wasn't even targeted.
So the enforcement lag is measured in years, and the network's response time is measured in weeks. That's not a fair fight. The network reshuffles faster than the designations can be drafted.
And the scale is staggering. FinCEN says $5 billion moved through IRGC-linked shell companies in 2024, $4 billion via Iran-linked oil operations, over $100 million laundered through digital assets. 80-91% of Iran's crude exports go to China. Chinese Customs reports zero official Iranian imports since 2022, while logging Malaysian imports exceeding 1.3 million barrels per day.
Malaysian, right. The oil that comes from a country that doesn't produce that much oil. The paperwork says Malaysia. The tanker's transponder says something else. The beneficial owner is a company in Hong Kong, owned by a company in the UAE, owned by a trust in Panama.
And the trust trustee is a lawyer in Geneva who's never met the actual owner. The owner's name appears nowhere. Not on the vessel registration, not on the bill of lading, not on the insurance. The insurance is held by a front company that exists only to hold insurance for other front companies.
This is the part where I start to wonder if the labyrinth is actually designed to be solved, but slowly, just expensive. Every layer costs an investigator time and legal fees. If unwinding the stack costs more than the asset is worth, the investigator stops.
That's exactly the economics. The FATF report found that complex structures are used to obscure beneficial ownership. The keyword is complex. Complex. The information is technically available. It's just distributed across so many jurisdictions that assembling is a multi-year project.
And the stooge problem compounds it. The Hungarian woman at BAC Consulting. She's a real person with a real address and a real signature. She's also a dead end. She doesn't know who ultimately controlled the pagers. She was hired to be the intermediate. That's the whole job. Be the intermediate and don't ask questions.
The ex-Mossad agents confirmed this. Gabriel said, when they're buying from us, they have zero clue that they're buying from the Mossad. We make like the Truman Show. Everything is controlled behind the scenes. The front company's employees are actors. They don't know they're in a production.
Which means the investigator's usual tool, flipping an insider, doesn't work. The insider doesn't know anything. You can flip the entire staff of Back Consulting and still not learn who rigged the pagers.
And the pager operations supply chain stacked at least four layers. Gold Apollo licensed the brand to BAC Consulting. BAC Consulting outsourced manufacturing to Norda Global. Norda Global sourced components from further down. Each layer had a plausible business reason to exist. Each layer's employees could pass a polygraph about their own ignorance.
The European correspondent called it layers of an onion. All of them washed their hands. That's the image Daniel's reaching for. The onion isn't a hiding place. It's a set of hands, each one washing itself of the layer below.
And the onion is different from the web. I keep coming back to this. Mossad built an onion. One operation. One supply chain. Vertical. The IRGC builds a web. Hundreds of parallel entities. Horizontal. The onion can be peeled. The web has to be mapped.
The onion is for a single kill. The web is for a business model. Daniel's question covers both, but the distinction matters because the countermeasures are different. Peeling an onion means following the money through each layer. Mapping a web means finding the shared identifiers that connect parallel entities.
And the shared identifiers are the vulnerability, the phone number used twice, the exhibition booth shared between an Iranian freight company and a Russian logistics company, the shipping agent who works for both a Panamanian shell and a UAE free zone company. These are the seams. The network builders focus on the legal structure and forget the operational metadata.
Operational metadata is a good phrase. It's the stuff that doesn't show up on a corporate registry. It shows up on a trade show floor plan, a phone bill, an email signature, the boring stuff.
And the boring stuff is what Karen and the treasury analysts actually use. The FinCEN alert says the network succeeds not through sophisticated encryption or dark web anonymity, but by exploiting the seams between jurisdictional frameworks, incomplete beneficial ownership registries, and the speed gap between regulatory adaptation and financial innovation.
Speed gap. The network moves at the speed of a wire transfer. The regulator moves at the speed of a mutual legal assistance treaty. That's not a gap. That's a canyon.
The Shamkani Network's oil-for-gold scheme ran for over 5 years. Treasury designated 50-plus individuals and entities and 50-plus vessels in July 2025. That was the largest single Iran action since 2018, and the network still reshuffled. 9 additional tankers designated in April 2026. The Department of Justice filed civil forfeiture complaints in March seeking $15.3
million. $15.3 million against a $5 billion network. That's a rounding error. The forfeiture is symbolic. The real weapon is the designation itself, which cuts the network off from dollar clearing.
And even that's porous. The Chinese refiners taking Shamkani cargoes remain unnamed. The Turkish gold dealers remain unnamed. The UAE banks clearing shipbuilding payments remain unnamed. The public record shows the shape of the network, but not its counterparties.
because the counterparties are also front companies. The buyer pays through a front company. The seller is a front company. The bank is a front bank. The whole transaction happens in a mirror world where every entity is a reflection of a reflection.
The Mossad agents said it outright. We create a pretend world. That's not hyperbole. That's the operational doctrine. The pretend world has its own companies, its own banks, its own supply chains, its own employees. It only intersects with the real world at the point of delivery, the pager, the missile, the barrel of oil.
And the pretend world is convincing because it operates by the real world's rules. Companies are registered, taxes are paid, contracts are signed. The only difference is that the ultimate beneficiary is a state actor or a sanctioned entity that can't appear on any document.
Which brings me to the question Daniel didn't ask but should have. How do you tell a stacked front from a merely complicated legitimate corporate structure? Because multinational corporations also have layers, holding companies in the Netherlands, operating companies in Singapore, IP subsidiaries in Ireland. The difference isn't the layers, it's the function.
The legitimate layers do something. The IP subsidiary holds actual patents. The holding company manages actual investments. The operating company employs actual people. The stacked front's layers do nothing except own each other. They're the corporate equivalent of a matryoshka doll with nothing in the center.
And Sardine's analysis is exactly this. Many intermediate companies do nothing except own the company below them. That's the tell. A real corporate structure has operational logic at each layer. A front stack has legal logic only.
The legal logic is always the same. Distance, jurisdiction, secrecy. Each layer exists to put a border between the asset and the owner. The border is the product.
And the border is for sale. Jurisdictions compete on secrecy. The UAE Free Zone offers shelf companies with nominee directors. Panama offers bearer shares. Hong Kong offers non-resident banking. The stack builder shops for borders the way a contractor shops for lumber.
The Walsh Reports Enterprise uses Liberian and Panamanian shells. The IRGC uses Hong Kong, China, and UAE free zones. The jurisdictions change. The logic doesn't. Pick the border that won't answer questions.
And the stooge problem scales with the stack. Each layer has its own nominee director. A lawyer in Geneva. A retired businessman in Cyprus. A housewife in Budapest. None of them know the whole. Each of them knows one small piece. A signature. A bank account. A forwarding address.
The housewife in Budapest is the perfect stooge. She's real. She's cooperative. She's useless. The investigator interviews her and learns that she signed some documents for a company that paid her a small fee. She doesn't know what the company did. She doesn't know who owned it. She doesn't know what a pager is.
And she's not lying. That's the structural feature. The stack is designed so that no single person below the top knows enough to betray the operation. The Mossad agent said the stooges don't necessarily know about the specific underlying plans, so even insiders can't reveal the truth.
The truth is distributed. No single node holds it. That's the difference between a secret and a structure. A secret lives in one head. A structure lives in the connections between 100 heads, none of which can see the whole.
And this is why the enforcement response is so slow. The investigator has to assemble the truth from fragments. A phone number in Panama, a booth at a Moscow trade show, a vessel name that used to be a Disney character. Each fragment is a lead. Each lead takes months.
The network is reassembling itself while the investigator works. The vessel gets renamed. The phone number gets disconnected. The booth gets rented by a different shell next year. The evidence degrades faster than the investigation proceeds.
The Shamkhani case is the proof. The oil for gold scheme ran for over 5 years. The designations came. The network reshuffled. The vessels transferred. The names changed. The forfeiture complaints target $15 million against a $5 billion operation. The enforcement is real. It's just not proportionate.
Proportionate enforcement would require the Chinese refiners to be named and sanctioned, the Turkish gold dealers, the UAE banks. That's not happening, because those counterparties are also protected by their own stacks. The whole system is stacks all the way down.
Here's the thing that keeps me up. The stack isn't a flaw in the system. It's a feature of the system. The same legal infrastructure that lets a multinational corporation optimize its tax burden lets a sanctions evader hide a tanker fleet. the same secrecy jurisdictions that protect legitimate privacy protect illegitimate ownership. There's no technical difference between a legitimate holding company and a front company. The difference is intent. And intent is the one thing a corporate registry can't record.
Intent is also the one thing an investigator can't subpoena. You can get the documents. You can't get the motive. The motive has to be inferred from the structure. And the structure is designed to make inference expensive.
The EU's fourth anti-money laundering directive says complexity of ownership structures is a high-risk factor. But high risk isn't illegal. A complex structure is a red flag, not a crime. The crime is the underlying activity. The structure just makes the crime hard to find.
The underlying activity is often banal. Selling oil, buying gold, shipping pages. The front company doesn't launder money in the dramatic sense. It just invoices. The invoice is the weapon. A marked up invoice. A fake bill of lading. A payment to a company that doesn't exist except on paper.
The Iran-Contra Enterprises Defects S.A. is the perfect example. The shell existed to make a markup look like a legitimate supplier payment. The invoice said defects. The auditor assumed the Portuguese arms supplier. The money actually went to Secord and Hakim's profit account. The invoice was the lie.
The invoice is a document. Documents are cheap. A stack of 40 shells costs maybe $40,000 in registration fees. The invoice they produce can move $40 million. The return on investment is obscene.
Which is why the CIA spent hundreds of millions on 12 front companies. Not because the companies were expensive, because the operations they enabled were expensive. The front company is the cheapest part of the operation. It's also the part that makes everything else possible.
The pager operation cost Hezbollah 16,000 walkie-talkies and 5,000 pagers. They bought them from Mossad fronts. The price isn't public, but the cost to Mossad was the front companies, a few registrations, a few nominee directors, a few bank accounts, the cheapest part of the operation, and the part that made the whole thing work.
The front companies are disposable. That's the other thing. The pager fronts were burned the moment the pagers exploded. BAC Consulting. Norta Global. They're done. The Mossad agents don't care. They'll set up new ones. The stack is a consumable.
Like a launch vehicle. The rocket burns up. The payload reaches orbit. The front company is the rocket. The operation is the payload.
The payload for the IRGC is oil revenue. $5 billion in 2024. The front companies are the launch vehicles. They burn up when designated. The network builds new ones. The launch cadence is faster than the designation cadence.
Daniel's question was about how the labyrinths are deliberately connected. I think the answer is that they're connected the way a real business is connected. Shared suppliers, shared customers, shared addresses, shared phone numbers. The connections are the mundane operational tissue of any enterprise. The only difference is that in a front stack, the connections are the evidence.
The connections are where the sloppiness lives. The trade show booth, the phone number, the shipping agent. These are the things the network builders forget to compartmentalize. They're careful about the legal structure. They're careless about the operational metadata.
Because the operational metadata doesn't feel like evidence. It feels like logistics. Who rented the booth? Who paid the phone bill? Who signed for the shipment? These are clerical details. And the clerk who handles them doesn't know they're incriminating.
The clerk at the trade show organizer doesn't know that the Iranian freight company and the Russian logistics company sharing a booth is a sanctions evasion signal. She just assigned booth 42 to two companies that requested to be adjacent.
The analyst at Karun sees the booth assignment and recognizes the pattern. Two companies that shouldn't know each other, sharing space. That's the seam. That's the deliberate connection Daniel's asking about. Not deliberate in the sense of plan to be found. Deliberate in the sense of plan to be useful. The network needed the two companies to coordinate. The coordination left a trace.
The trace is the vulnerability. The network is a machine for moving money and goods. The machine has moving parts. The moving parts touch each other. The touching leaves marks. The marks are the evidence.
The marks are everywhere. The shared phone number between a Panamanian shell and a UAE Free Zone company. The vessel that was called Mickey Mouse last year and is called Seabreeze this year. The insurance policy held by a company that exists only to hold insurance policies. The marks are the labyrinth's own footprints.
which is why the enforcement agencies are getting better at pattern matching. The FinCEN alert from May is essentially a pattern catalog. Shared addresses, shared counterparties, name similarities with designated companies, operating just outside formal designation parameters. The alert is telling banks what to look for.
The banks are the choke point. The front companies need bank accounts. The bank accounts need to clear dollars. The dollar clearing runs through New York. That's the vulnerability. The network can hide in Hong Kong and Panama and the UAE. But the moment it touches a dollar, it touches the United States.
Which is why the designations work at all. The designation cuts off dollar clearing. The front company can still exist. It just can't transact. The network reshuffles to get a clean company with a clean bank account. The reshuffling takes time. The time is the enforcement gain.
The time is measured in weeks. The enforcement gain is temporary. The network builds a new stack. The new stack touches a dollar. The designation cycle repeats. It's a war of attrition, and the network has more shells than the Treasury has designations.
The Shamkani network alone had over 115 vessels, entities, and individuals targeted. That's one family. The IRGC has multiple families. Each family has multiple networks. Each network has multiple shells. The scale is industrial.
The industrial scale is the point. The stack isn't a boutique product. It's mass-produced. The UAE Free Zone will register a shelf company in days. Panama will issue bearer shares. Hong Kong will open a non-resident bank account. The raw materials are cheap and abundant.
The FATF report analyzed 106 case studies. That's 106 documented examples of complex structures concealing ownership. The actual number is orders of magnitude higher. Every major money laundering case involves some kind of layered ownership. Every major sanctions evasion case involves a stack.
Every intelligence operation that needs commercial cover uses a stack. The CIA's 12 front companies, Mossad's pager supply chain, the Iran-Contra Enterprise's 21 Swiss accounts. The stack is the universal tool. It's the Swiss Army knife of covert activity.
The Swiss Army knife analogy is good. The stack has multiple functions: deniability, distance, jurisdictional arbitrage, investigator fatigue, stooge compartmentalization. Each layer adds a function. The whole tool is more than the sum of its parts.
The whole tool is designed to be used once and discarded. The pager fronts are done. The Iran-Contra Enterprises shells are in the Walsh report. The CIA's 12 front companies are all but two shut down. The stack isn't built to last. It's built to last long enough.
Long enough for the operation to complete. The pager operation needed the fronts to survive until the pagers were delivered. The oil scheme needed the fronts to survive until the cargo was sold. The stack's lifespan is the operation's lifespan.
The operation's lifespan is the enforcement lag. 5 years for the oil for gold scheme. The stack survived because the investigation took 5 years. The investigation took 5 years because the stack had 40 layers in 12 jurisdictions.
The circularity is the design. The stack creates the lag. The lag creates the lifespan. The lifespan creates the profit. The profit funds the next stack. It's a self-sustaining system.
The system is legal. That's the part that should make everyone uncomfortable. The individual components are all legal. Registering a company is legal. Opening a bank account is legal. Hiring a nominee director is legal. The illegality only emerges at the level of the whole, and the whole is invisible.
The whole is invisible because no single registry sees it. The Hong Kong registry sees the Hong Kong company. The Panama registry sees the Panamanian shell. The UAE registry sees the free zone entity. No one sees the connections. The connections exist only in the minds of the network's controllers.
In the phone bills, the trade show floor plans, the shipping manifests, the boring documents that no one thinks to hide because no one thinks they matter.
The boring documents are the story. The Shamkani Network's shared phone number. The Iran-Contra Enterprises' defects name mimicry. The pager chain's licensing agreements. These are the deliberate connections Daniel asked about. They're deliberate because the network needs them to function. They're connections because the network is a network. And they're findable because the network is run by humans who make mistakes.
The humans are the weak link. The network is a machine, but the machine has human operators. The operators get tired. They get sloppy. They reuse a phone number. They share a booth. They forget to change the vessel name. The sloppiness is the investigator's entry point.
The sloppiness is inevitable. The network is too complex to be run perfectly. The complexity that hides the truth also creates the errors that reveal it. The labyrinth is its own undoing.
But the undoing is slow. The labyrinth doesn't collapse. It degrades. The investigator peels one layer. The network rebuilds it. The investigator maps one connection. The network severs it. The process is asymptotic. The investigator approaches the truth, but never quite reaches it.
Sometimes the truth is reached. The Walsh Report reached it. The CBS interview reached it. The FinCEN alert reached it. The truth is reachable. It's just expensive.
The expense is the point. The stack is a tax on investigation. Every layer costs money to peel. Every jurisdiction costs time to navigate. The network pays a small amount to build the stack. The investigator pays a large amount to unwind it. The asymmetry is the whole game.
The asymmetry is growing. The network's tools are getting cheaper. The investigator's tools are getting more expensive. The network can register a shell for a few thousand dollars. The investigator needs a team of lawyers and analysts and years of mutual legal assistance requests.
The network is playing a different game. It's not trying to win. It's trying to make winning too expensive. The stack isn't a fortress. It's a toll road. Every step toward the truth costs a toll. The investigator runs out of money before the network runs out of layers.
I lost $11,000 to one of these in 2003. Bought a used Mercedes from a company in Cyprus that turned out to be owned by a company in the British Virgin Islands that was owned by a trust in Liechtenstein. The car existed. It arrived. Ran fine for 6 months. Then Interpol showed up at my door because the VIN matched a stolen vehicle from Germany. The company in Cyprus was gone. The bank account was closed. The phone number was disconnected. I still have the car. It's in a garage in Haifa. I can't sell it because the title is clouded. I can't register it because the VIN is flagged. So I pay storage on a car I can't drive and can't get rid of.
The stooge at the bottom of the stack. You didn't know you were in a labyrinth until the labyrinth closed behind you.
I knew the price was too good. $19,000 for a car that should have been $30,000. The seller said it was a fleet vehicle from a corporate lease. The paperwork looked fine. The company looked fine. It had a website. It had a phone number. It had a physical address in Nicosia. I checked. The address was real. It was a serviced office with a receptionist.
The serviced office is the tell. A real company has a real office. A front company has a serviced office. The receptionist answers the phone and says the company name, but she works for the office provider, not the company.
She was very professional. I called twice. She said the company was in a meeting both times. I thought that meant they were busy. It meant they didn't exist.
The receptionist is the first layer. She doesn't know she's a layer. She just answers the phone.
The second layer was the bank. The wire went to a bank in Cyprus. The bank confirmed receipt. The bank was real. The account was real. The account holder was the company. The company was a shell. The bank didn't know or didn't care. The account was closed 6 weeks after I wired the money.
The bank is the choke point, and the choke point is porous. The bank did its due diligence. The company had registration documents. The documents were real. The company was a shell. The bank can't tell the difference because the difference is intent.
The third layer was the shipping company. The car was shipped from Limassol to Haifa. The shipping company was real. The bill of lading was real. The container was real. The car inside was real. The car was stolen. The shipping company didn't know. They just moved a container.
The shipping company is the cutout. It exists to move goods, not to know what the goods are. The stack uses the shipping company's legitimacy to launder the stolen car.
The fourth layer was the title. The title was issued by the German Registration Authority. It was a real title. It was for a different car. The VIN on the title matched the VIN on the car. The VIN on the car was from a stolen car. The title was forged. The forgery was good enough to pass the Israeli import inspection.
The forged title is the invoice, the document that makes the transaction look legitimate. The stack's whole job is to produce documents that survive inspection. The car is real. The title is fake. The inspection sees the car and the title and approves the import.
I paid $11,000 for a car I can't drive. The storage costs me 40 shekels a month. That's about $12. I've been paying it for 23 years. The car is worth maybe 4,000 now. I'm in for 11,000 plus storage. I don't want to think about the total.
The stack costs you more than the car. That's the point. The stack is a tax on everyone who touches it. You paid the tax. The investigator paid the tax. The bank paid the tax. The shipping company paid the tax. The only people who didn't pay are the people at the top.
I don't know who was at the top. The police in Haifa said the trail went cold in the British Virgin Islands. The trust in Liechtenstein had a trustee who was a lawyer in Zurich. The lawyer invoked attorney-client privilege. The investigation stopped there.
The attorney-client privilege is the final layer. The lawyer doesn't have to reveal the client. The client is the beneficial owner. The beneficial owner is the person who stole the car. The lawyer knows. The lawyer won't say. The privilege is the wall.
The lawyer sent me a letter. It said the trust had no assets. The company had been dissolved. The matter was closed. I wrote back and asked for the name of the trust's beneficiary. The lawyer wrote back and said the beneficiary was another trust. In the Cayman Islands.
The stack never ends. It just changes jurisdictions. The Cayman Trust is owned by another trust. The other trust is owned by a foundation in Panama. The foundation is owned by a person whose name appears nowhere. The person is the thief. The thief is untouchable.
I stopped writing letters after the third one. The postage was costing more than the car was worth. That's when I understood. The stack isn't designed to hide the truth. It's designed to make the truth not worth finding.
That's the cleanest summary of the whole thing. The stack is a cost-benefit weapon. It doesn't make the truth invisible. It makes the truth unprofitable. The investigator can find the truth. It just costs more than the truth is worth.
Daniel asked how the labyrinths are deliberately connected. The answer is that they're connected by the same things that connect any business. Phone numbers, addresses, bank accounts, shipping manifests. The connections are mundane. The mundanity is the camouflage.
The mundanity is the vulnerability. The phone number shared between two shells. The booth shared at a trade show. The serviced office receptionist who answers for a company that doesn't exist. These are the seams. The seams are where the light gets in.
The light gets in slowly. The investigator peels one layer. The network rebuilds it. The process is asymptotic. The truth is approached but never quite reached. And the network keeps moving. The oil keeps flowing. The cars keep getting stolen. The pagers keep getting delivered.
The pagers are the extreme case. The stack worked perfectly. The pagers were delivered. The operation succeeded. The stack was burned. The agents walked away. The pretend world closed for business and reopened somewhere else. The world is their stage.
Daniel's question was about the labyrinth. I think the answer is that the labyrinth isn't a place. It's a process. It's the process of making the truth too expensive to find. The labyrinth is built one layer at a time, and it's rebuilt every time a layer is peeled. The labyrinth is alive.
The labyrinth is legal. That's the uncomfortable truth. Every layer is a legal entity. Every connection is a legal transaction. The illegality only emerges at the level of the whole, and the whole is invisible. The labyrinth is a legal structure that produces illegal outcomes.
The legal structure is the problem. The same laws that let a legitimate business organize itself across jurisdictions let a criminal network hide itself across jurisdictions. The law can't distinguish between the two.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.